From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
I'm Robert Siegel, and it's Thursday, the day we read from your email.
And one question we received this week was this. Do you people realize that you aired a free half-hour ad for the armed forces? My story about Army recruiting in Texas prompted that reaction from Nomi Levine of Berkeley, California. She continues, I don't know whether it's good or bad that most young, poor people don't listen to NPR. If they heard this story, more of them might get to thinking that the Army is a safe, viable option. I'll bet you made Rummy's day.
Mark Rosenblum of New Orleans, listening to the story, was struck by the consistent way new recruits explained their decision to enlist. He writes, in every case, they cited their lack of other or any job opportunities in Huntsville. In this way, the all-volunteer Army takes advantage of the growing gap between rich and poor in this country, and the lack of economic opportunity at home is an enabling factor in this administration's military exploits.
And this from Andy Sherwood, also of New Orleans. I was reminded of my own journey through the military recruiting system, with the sales pitches and pressure from the recruiters on one hand, and the sadness and disapproval that entering the Army brought to my mother on the other. He continues, I was also reminded of seeing the film Forrest Gump in an on-post movie theater. When, during the film, the Army recruiter sets his sights on young Gump, a soldier in the audience yelled, run, Forrest, run! The rest of us laughed in approval.
Another fiction-to-reality comparison was my story comparing television's crime drama CSI with the real criminal forensics lab in the city of Las Vegas, where the TV show is set. Mike Fergus, the president of the Law Enforcement Emergency Services Video Association, a nonprofit group, agreed with the concerns raised in the story about presenting real evidence to courtrooms full of people whose knowledge of police work comes from TV crime shows. He writes, I am painfully aware of the problems my members have had convincing district attorneys, juries, and worst of all, detectives within their own agencies that the nifty video enhancements seen so often on shows like CSI do not exist in the real world. Thank you for helping to set the record straight.
Chris Diekman of New York disagrees. I think CSI does a very effective and creative job of showing how the many disparate elements of forensics are put together to build a case. The appreciation for this kind of work and the people who do it can only be a positive effect. I don't agree that jurors would be affected. And I think the forensic firearms guy who was offended by the show's inaccuracies should just get over it. You should just be glad there's a show about his line of work at all, regardless of the liberties it must take to produce effective TV drama.
And several listeners wrote in about the strange noise they heard in Melissa's story Friday about the invasion of Brood 10 in the Washington suburbs. Terry Grush of Greeley, Colorado, writes this. I started my car today after work and was met with a really odd sound coming from the car. After some investigation, I came to realize that the sound was that of the cicadas, which served as the background to Melissa Block's interview. Once resolved, I relaxed and enjoyed the show. Thanks for bringing back the memories of a childhood.
Now one footnote on our May 17th story about letters to President Eisenhower after the Brown versus Board of Education decision 50 years ago. We used actors to read the letters, and the story included a letter from a 10-year-old girl in Burbank, California, named Sarah Jane Godwin. Well, this week we got an email from Ms. Godwin, who'd heard from friends who thought they'd heard her name on our program, and they were right. So we asked Ms. Godwin, who's now a writer, to read her letter in her own voice.
Mr. Dwight D. Eisenhower, President of the United States, White House, Washington, D.C. Dear Sir, I would like to congratulate you on your success in passing the law about Negroes going to public schools. I would like to know if there is any difference between the white race and the Negro race, and why some parents disagree with having white and Negro children go to school together. I would like to know this because several Spanish, Polish, Japanese, and Chinese go to my school. Respectfully, Sarah Jane Godwin, age 10.
Ms. Godwin says her teacher in Burbank at the time didn't tell them what to write.
Actually, it struck me then and even now as being a very odd sort of thing. I didn't literally understand what the issues were. And had no basis for understanding why people would feel that children should be separated. That was almost inconceivable to me. Perhaps I haven't learned much in the last 50 years. I still find it so strange.
That's Sarah Jane Godwin, now grown up and living in Marin County, California.
Some sad news about another anniversary we noted on Monday's program. The Roto-Rooter jingle was sung by Captain Stubby and the Buccaneers in 1954. And on Tuesday morning, we learned that Captain Stubby died late Monday at the St. Joseph Hospital in Kokomo, Indiana. His real name was Tom Fouts, and he was 85. In his youth, Fouts enlisted five friends from Indiana Central University, and together they formed a band. His stage name was, at first, a nickname.
They called me Stubby around home when I was growing up on the farm, because I grew up that way, short and stubby. And when I got in radio, I was with a group, and by golly, we didn't have a name, so they called us the Six Hoosiers. Well, it's not, didn't have any jingling to it. So they run a contest to name our group, and some lady won $100 for calling us Captain Stubby and the Buccaneers.
On the day they went into the studio to record the Roto-Rooter song, the producer told them he wanted something special for the last line.
And, of course, I had the frog voice that I'd used down through the years. And I said, let's do that, because he wanted a bass singer to go down low with that. And I said, well, I can shift gears and go lower than that. And he said, let's try it. So we did, and they said, that's it. By golly.
Call Roto-Rooter, that's the name.
And we go troubles down the drain.
Roto-Rooter, Roto-Rooter.
Another melody on our air in a story Tuesday about the breakup of the jam band Phish left some listeners scratching their heads. Okay, I give up, writes listener Randall Rule. What was the Phish cover song you played? I just can't quite place it. Well, this is Phish reinterpreting the theme to our program from a live concert recording. A studio version appears on a Phish album from 1994. All Things Reconsidered has been part of the band's touring repertoire ever since.
And if you would like us to reconsider something that we have aired, write to us. The email address is atc@npr.org. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from and how you pronounce your name.